This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may dwell upon the earth. Great to be with you. And today I'm going to do a little bit different, a different kind of program. I want to address a simple email to me from an individual whose initial is A, last name Copeland. And he actually signs it with a different name at the end, but he acknowledges the fact that he is a Jewish individual. But he writes a very interesting email, basically attacking my logic and attacking me. And I'm going to give you this entire email as he wrote it and respond to some of the things that he says. And I think it's a very valuable exercise because for me to talk about what he says concerning my beliefs is a very good way to dispel some of the false ideas and attitudes toward me that people have. And I want to deal directly with some of his accusations. Yeah, I hear it all the time. Oh, you oppose all Jews, or you blame all Jews, or whatever. And, of course, the truth is that I have focused my attention on the extremist Jews, the supremacist Jews who have so much power. And, yes, there is an organized Jewish community. And, yes, the Jewish community in general tends to support the radical supremacist activities of individual Jews such as Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz, Ariel Sharon, for that matter. Now, it is true that there are individual Jews around the world who oppose them. But, ladies and gentlemen, how many times have we heard about supposed German guilt during the Second World War, or accusing Germans of crimes against Jews? And it seems to me that we can't make any sort of group accusation today. Let me read parts of his email. In fact, I'll read all of his email, every line. I have no reason not to. And we can discuss some of these issues in today's program. Dr. David Duke, I am personally amazed by your accusations made against other groups. I would like to name one in particular, one that you are fond of, the Jewish supremacy problem. You seem like a very intelligent man and have made several good arguments against the State of Israel and the Jewish people as a whole. However, a large number of those arguments are unjust. And being the great patriot that you are, I was sure that you would want to look at both sides fairly before making a judgment. He goes on to say, you say in one of your more poignant pieces about Abu Ghraib and Israel, how it is truly the Jews' fault for the scandal. Personally, if you ask for my opinion, that accusation seems, if I may say, Hitler-esque, reminiscent of all the proven false accusations that were made against the Jews in Germany. Well, let me take this first point that he made. All right, first off, you're throwing around the words so easily. That is the Jews' fault for the scandal, as if all Jews are at fault for the scandal of Abu Ghraib. And what I have said, and what I will stand behind, is that this whole attitude of torture in the Middle East is something that's been institutionalized by Israel. It is something that has truly been fomented by Israel in terms of Israel's programs in the Middle East, and there's a lot of evidence. In fact, we can talk about one of the commanders of the prison. They themselves said that Israeli contractors wherein they're instructing individuals in some of the tortures. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, I believe that the whole line of taking pictures of Arab men and women in various pornographic poses and homosexual poses, I really believe that these pictures were for a specific intelligence purpose. And that was, and this is something we know because you can read about it in some Israeli agents, former agents' books about Israeli methods of torture. This is one way that they deal with the Palestinians in the occupied territories, is when they capture them and imprison them and torture them. They often make them do absolutely incredibly perverted, obscene, homosexual, and heterosexual acts, even with innocent girls. They take pictures, and then they know that once they release the Palestinian captive, they know that he will, in fact, inform for them. Otherwise, the pictures will be released, and the families would do their own, quote, justice against the individual Palestinian who committed such acts. Of course, under torture, people will do anything. But this is what I believe the role of the picture-taking was at Abu Ghraib. And ladies and gentlemen, I know for a fact that the massive Israeli torture of the Palestinians, this has been going on for years. In fact, I know because I read organizations, newspapers such as the New York Times. For instance, Mr. Greenberg, who wrote an extensive story on torture, he was basically trying to mitigate the fact that the Israelis tortured Palestinians. But in the process of the article, he mentioned the fact that Israelis were torturing some 6,000 Palestinians per month. Of course, the fact is, until recent times, Israel was one of the few states in the world, perhaps the only so-called Western state in the world, where torture was legal. That's right, it was legal and authorized by the government. And it does seem to me an interesting coincidence that at the same time the Jewish neocons, these radical Jewish extremists, at the same time that they seem to gain control over American foreign policy, America begins these kinds of policies. Policies which, ladies and gentlemen, I am completely opposed to, and I believe they go against every principle of the United States of America and every principle that I grew up as a young American believing in. And we were always, in my mind at least, the good guys. We didn't do that kind of thing. That was left for the communists. And of course, at one time in my life, the Nazis. But let me tell you something. America today, we are torturing people. But I can show the evidence pretty clearly that we're taking and following Israel's lead. And it is Jewish leaders and Jewish formulators of American policy that is setting this kind of policy in motion. And it's a policy that goes against every principle, I believe, of the United States. And it symbolizes that we're going wrong. Now, I have not faulted all Jews for this scandal. But again, I believe that Jewish supremacists pose a tremendous threat to the world in many areas. We hear a lot about, you know, white supremacism, and we hear a lot about the history of what you would call Aryan supremacism. At least that's what the media describes it as. You hear many stories about the different threats in the world, and yet there's very little discussion about a very powerful phenomena, an extreme phenomena, which I can document. And yet this extreme outlook on life toward non-Jews, the treating and the belief, the attitude of toward non-Jews that they are in fact animals, that the purpose of non-Jews on the earth is to serve Jews. There are Jews right now practicing and saying prayers in the White House who are part of the Chabad Lubavitcher sect, which actually maintains the idea that Gentiles are part of the animal kingdom, and the whole entire purpose of the world and everything in it, including all Gentiles, is to serve the Jews, that Jews are somehow they're the holy seed, and what we must do, what every Gentile must do, is to get on our hands and knees and serve Jews. Now, that may sound a little radical and pretty terrible to some people listening. Now, I'm not saying that all Jews have that opinion. I'm not saying that every Jew is radical in that way. No, nothing of the sort. But I am saying that the Lubavitch movement does have these opinions, and I can document and prove those opinions. You know, one of their followers and a well-known person who's been published in the Jewish Week, which is the largest Jewish publication in the United States, and I quoted this individual in the Duke Report 2 issues back, and I've quoted him on my website, and you can go to my website and take a look at it. He said specifically that if a Jew needs a liver and a non-Jew is passing by, is it moral for the Jews to take that non-Jew's liver and give it to the Jew? No, in other words, murder the man to give this liver to a Jew. And he goes on to justify that position entirely. As far as his saying that the accusation I made seems to be Hitler-esque, reminiscent of all the proven false accusations that were made against the Jews in Germany. Again, it's kind of like the Holocaust. You know, what aspect of the Holocaust you're talking about? The other day, Tony Blair responded to Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran's call for a Holocaust conference coming up in October to discuss the issues of the Holocaust. He said, well, they can come to Europe and they can see the proof of the Holocaust. Well, what specific proof is he referring to? What aspect of the Holocaust? That people were killed? But the people that question aspects of the Holocaust, the revisionists, and many of them are quite excellent scholars and very decent men, I must say. And they're not individuals who promote any idea of any Holocaust or defend the Holocaust. What they say, sure, yes, there were atrocities. And there were atrocities on all sides of the war. But the form of the atrocities in the Holocaust, they say, was not as presented in the common historical lexicon. And, of course, all through history, you've had many revisionist periods of thought when people had different opinions about historical events. And there's certainly room for argument about ideas concerning the Holocaust. You know, did Hitler have a program to exterminate all the Jews of Europe? If he did, where is the documents? Is there any single document that really shows that to be a fact? I mean, you'd have to have a lot of direct orders to a lot of Germans if you're trying to exterminate every Jew in Europe. You can't do that on some sort of a whim or some sort of an idea. And we captured most of the German documents intact. I mean, that's a question that is raised. Also, why did so many millions of Jews survive the war if there was a plan to exterminate them all? And why did the Germans ship Jews from one side of Europe to the other? Why didn't they simply exterminate them there? And why did they build so-called gas chambers to exterminate Jews when it's far cheaper, easier, and simpler simply to use bullets, which cost less than a penny? And you can use those bullets anywhere. You don't have to have, you know, crematories or cities of death to do it. There's many questions. And as I mentioned in one of my broadcasts, the revisionists have shown even the pro-Holocaust writers have themselves revised the so-called Holocaust dramatically. The battleship of the Holocaust, the main power of the Holocaust, was always the Auschwitz story. And Auschwitz was said to be a place where over 4 million Jews perished. This was told to the West. This was on the plaque at the camp. This has been in countless, thousands and thousands of articles and magazine pieces, books, television documentary mentions about the millions killed at Auschwitz. And the latest documentation from the Holocaust, and it's not revisionist, but the Holocaust-supported researcher on the subject was, of course, Jean-Claude Pressac of France. And in his very last calculations of numbers of Auschwitz, he says about 400,000 people died. Now, those numbers are quite horrendous. But he's saying that's the numbers from all causes. And yet everyone admits there were terrible epidemics and terrible starvation, other problems at the end of the war because Germany was collapsing. The roads, the bridges were destroyed. Hospitals were destroyed. Railways were destroyed. Shipping was destroyed, for instance, that went to the east and supplied many of the eastern areas of what was then the Third Reich. And so, you know, when you talk about these issues, such as the Holocaust, and that's the whole issue, that's why there can't be any discussion on the issue, why any discussion is not allowed, because there are so many good questions that are raised. They can't afford any questions to be raised. I think the revisionists have a right to be heard, and again, some of these questions will be resolved. Perhaps in the favor of the Holocaust historians. Some will be resolved in the case of revisionists. But there's no way that anyone can arrive at the truth without delving into both sides, to hearing dissenting points of view. If you have a system where a dissenter is going to be stripped of his academic position at a university, such as has happened in Germany and other places in Europe, where they are likely to lose even their pension, what they've worked for all their lives, lose their credentials, be treated as a pariah, in fact, even jailed, as David Irving has been recently in Vienna, or that the fine and wonderful scholar and good friend, Gamer Rudolph, who has been imprisoned for many years now at a maximum security prison simply for scientifically questioning some aspects of the Holocaust. If you have a climate of inquiry such as this, or climate of debate such as this, obviously you're not going to have a very good opportunity to arrive at the truth. And why would such a climate have to be created? Now, as far as other accusations, what were the accusations? That much of the Jewish community supported Bolshevism, which Hitler and other Germans considered to be a great threat to their country, and many Americans considered to be a great threat to the United States, and Canadians to Canada, and British, you know, to Britain. In fact, Winston Churchill himself, in a very powerful article called Zionism versus Bolshevism, A Struggle for the Soul of the Jewish People, talks about the Jewish role behind communism around the world, fueling the revolutionary movements, and the great danger that communism rested to the world. And he basically says that the Jews gripped Russia by the hair of their heads. And of course, these aren't all Jews, but these are these very anti-human-esque Jews, extreme Jews, who are truly sycophants, and they're truly individuals who hate humanity, and they promoted and supported communism, which is an ideology of mass murder, an ideology of suppression. And by the way, why do you have open communist parties when you have the record of communism in, for instance, the Soviet Union and Eastern countries, where tens of millions of people, without any question, have been exterminated and killed, and yet there's not any allowal of any discussion in the West. And we're not talking about people who are saying that that Jews should be killed or should be hurt or there's any justification for mass murder. In fact, most of the people like Jürgen Graf and Gamer Rudolph and David Irving are appalled by any atrocities that took place. They just happen to also discuss some of the atrocities, such as hundreds of thousands of people in Nagasaki and Hiroshima and Dresden, Germany, women and children who were burned alive in their own homes, and how that this certainly has to rate as a terrible war crime and an atrocity, if indeed Auschwitz was one. That the displacement of 7 to 11 million Germans from what was Prussia and East Prussia and who suffered mightily under communism, mass rapes and murders and theft and this destruction. That would also rate as a war crime. The treatment of some of the German prisoners after the Second World War, after the war was over, there was no more threat whatsoever from National Socialist Germany, and yet hundreds of thousands of Germans were kept more than a year after the end of hostilities, and many of them were kept in appalling conditions. James Backe, in his book Other Losses, talks about a lot of these issues and marshals a tremendous amount of evidence to talk about these kinds of atrocities. The city of Dresden is one that David Irving wrote a whole book about. And this is a case where the Allies were conducting an experiment, and they literally dropped millions of tons of incendiaries on the city and created a firestorm, and it was just one of the most horrible mass murders in all of history against civilian population, against a civilian target, not a military target. So, you know, what are the false accusations? Was the fact that the World Jewry, 1933, in the Hague, Netherlands, declared war on Germany and said they'd do everything they could to get their country into war. Was that a false accusation? Was the idea that that some of these radical Jews were behind Freudianism and some of these weird anti-family, anti-cultural processes, and some of the really sick modern art and a lot of the pornography that dominated that country? In fact, who do you think dominates the pornography in the United States of America? It's not all Jews, but there's no argument about the fact that as a group that there has been a very close relationship between Jews and, quote, pornography. In fact, I can show you Jewish authors, read my website, who talk about the fact that they have been the great barons of pornography and the great pioneers of pornography in the United States of America, and they've been the very core of the pornographic industry, which obviously I don't think has been a very healthy process for the people of the United States of America or the people of the world. And isn't it interesting, too, ladies and gentlemen, that in almost any country of the world, in Germany or France or Belgium or Austria or Scandinavia, somebody could go into a porno shop and see the most horrible films imaginable. I'm not just talking about children. I'm talking about everything from scatology to weirdism and sadomasochism, the very worst perversions and horrors that could lie in the human spirit. Yet that's legal and state approved, and yet someone can't even discuss the facts of history. That to me is a perfect example of what's going on. Is that another false accusation that the Jews, like the ADL, are trying to pass laws and prevent a discussion of these issues? Well, obviously they are, and they're doing it, and they'd like to do the same thing in the United States, even though they say often they don't, but they work all over the world to do precisely that, to put people in prison simply for having an opinion about even Israel that they don't like. I'll go on with the letter. He says, you blatantly shift the argument away from what America as a nation did incorrectly into what your personal problems with the Jewish people are. And if you allow me, the same problems I'd like to confront here. You know, my personal problems. Let me tell you something. I never had a personal problem with any Jewish person. I had nothing but respect for them as a young man, which my book, My Awakening and Jewish Supremacism, talks about at length. Until I got into this fight and started exposing some of the excesses of Jewish supremacism and Jewish extremism. And you know, good Italians, they'll oppose the mafia, and they'll oppose organized crime, and they'll fight against it. In fact, many of the best prosecutors of organized crime have been, in fact, people of Italian descent. But it seems to me odd that, and they acknowledge the mafia and the Jewish role in that particular organization. But at the same time, Hollywood doesn't talk about the Jewish syndicate and the huge organized crime that goes on in the United States and around the world that is of Jewish origin. And in fact, of course, I've talked about the Russian mafia. So again, look at the difference here. You know, the Jewish community needs to take a responsibility here, condemn this kind of activity and this operation. This writer himself condemns the Mossad. You know, he needs to take some responsibility and hopefully get the Jewish community to stop supporting this incredible anti-Gentile extremism. He goes on, he says, firstly, you accuse the Jewish people, a religion, might I remind you. Well, you can remind me that the Jewish people simply religion, but even Jewish leaders themselves say specifically that they're not simply a religion. There are Jews who are religious and there are Jews who are not religious, but they are still Jews. Israel is a home for the Jewish people. It's not a home just for religious Jews, but for people of Jewish descent. Now, that's a fact. You don't have to be a religious Jew to immigrate to Israel. And in fact, in Israel, a Jew cannot marry a non-Jew, even if the Jew is not religious. In fact, that's a good point right there. You know, if Judaism was just a religion, if a Jew is a non-Jew, then why is he not a non-Jew? They consider themselves a people, a bloodline, and the religion itself is a religion based on the preservation of the Jewish seed, the Jewish bloodline, the Jewish people. That's the reality of it. And Israel is a segregated nation all the way up and down. So, you know, they are a people. They are a heritage. And they've been a very united heritage. So he goes on, first you accuse the Jewish people of religion, I might remind you. Again, that's proven false. Of almost single-handedly committing one of the largest genocides of the 20th century in Russia. I cannot follow your logic, for I cannot get the direct step from religion to nationality. Okay, well, first off, you know, I didn't say they almost single-handedly committed. They had certainly Gentile corroborators, and they had the many, many Gentiles that went along with them for one reason or another. But the Jewish community around the world supported the Bolshevik Revolution, and the Bolshevik Revolution was, in fact, in its early days, overwhelmingly dominated by Jews. And the Jewish community in Russia and around the world supported their efforts. Trotsky, Lenin was part Jewish, Kamenev, Sverdlov, and we can go on and on and on. The Cheka, the KGB, the you can't call it Russian, it's really Jewish secret police that murdered literally millions of people in Russia, was again led almost exclusively in those days by Jews. And you can read Jewish writers who specifically make that allegation themselves. I mean, major mainstream Jewish writers who say that. And it's not a question. Yes, these Jews were communists and these Jews were atheists, but they also had a loyalty to the Jewish people. And in communism, they saw a way that they became advanced as Jews. They worked together. And communism advanced the Jewish people as a group. The Jews were not part of the aristocracy of Russia. The only way they could overcome the aristocracy of the Tsar and the Tsarina and the other members of the nobility across Russia was through revolution. And they literally rose to the point where they dominated the Russian government. There's just no argument about that. It's a reality. And this religion to nationality, again, he goes on to say, not only that, I called a serious question from your supporting evidence. Not that any was listed. Well, there's plenty of it listed. You can read my chapter in the Russian Revolution online. Due to the nature of communism's fundamental dislike of religion. You then continued to almost the point of saying that the Holocaust was justified. Well, again, stretching an idea completely out of proportion, never have I said that any aspect of what's called the Holocaust or any aspect of human atrocities or mass murder was justified. I believe that any sort of mass murder and destruction of innocent people, whether they be Jews or Germans, or French, or Italians, or Americans, or Arabs, or any people, I think that that's wrong. And I think it's an absolute crime, a crime truly against humanity and against any sort of decent impulse in our people. And so there's no, you know, again, there's no reason to hardly respond to what he said here, because, you know, I don't in any way say that the Holocaust was justified. You know, I certainly do say that the fact that the European people, for instance, in Eastern Europe, rose up against some of the Jewish organized leaders of communism, that I understand. I don't understand any atrocities that took place, but I do know that atrocities take place in war, and there have been atrocities on both sides of many different issues. Quote, he says, I cannot stand for a person that, no matter the circumstances, agrees with the principles of basic retaliation. As I quote the great leader Gandhi, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. Well, you know, again, if you want to talk about an eye for an eye, I guess we can go right back to Judaism, because that's certainly something that Judaism certainly believes. In fact, they believe you should kill, you can pluck out 10 eyes for one eye. And I can quote you some of the Jewish radicals on that subject. Continuing, he says, on this ludicrous train of thought, further divulging from the original topic, you imply that Jews tortured British citizens, forcing them to leave. If that's the case, why do America and England still give so much aid to Israel? Well, again, there's no doubt about the fact that the Irgun, the other Jewish Stern Gang, and the other Jewish revolutionary and terrorist movements of the Middle East were anxious to get the British out of Israel so they could do their work, so they could create the Israeli state and suppress and murder, actually, and terrorize the Arab population, which they ultimately did. And in the process of doing so, they committed terrorist acts against the British and others. They blew up the King David Hotel, for instance. They captured and tortured many British citizens and soldiers and British personnel, and they would purposely torture them and display their tortured bodies as a way of terror. Now, there's many, many books on this subject, and there's no arguing about that. I'm sorry that you're not quite as informed on it as you should be, but that's the reality of it. Moving on, I'm going back to his letter now. He says, oh, by the way, why does America and England still give so much aid to Israel? Well, that's a good question. And the reason why that America and England do give so much aid to Israel is because the Jewish supremacist lobby is the most powerful lobby in Washington. They control much of the media. And any politician who dares to stand against them will not only not get any more money from very important sources, but they will support their opponents. The media will go after them like gangbusters. And there's other factors as well, but it's just that's the reason. The American people don't even know this. The American people don't even realize that the only nation of the Middle East, the only Middle Eastern government that's attacked America terroristically, has been Israel, such as in the Levon affair, such as the attack on the USS Liberty, and an act which I believe qualifies as not just an espionage act but a terroristic act was the Jonathan Pollard case, which, when selling his and Israel selling this material to the Soviets, resulted in the death of many, many American operatives in Eastern Europe at the hands of the communists. He says, moving on, you explain how Israel is the biggest violator of human rights, and when I say that, I do think that Israel is the biggest violator in a per capita basis. Obviously, Israel is not a huge country. If we may backtrack for a second, this is him again, I'm sure that the statement can be disproved. Looking at the current scandals in the Western world, a very strong argument can be made how Israel is not the biggest violator of human rights. Furthermore, you mentioned Israel is a nation with one of the highest prison populations in the world. Need I remind you, a great esteemed member of our great nation, that is, in fact, the United States of America, has the highest prison population in the world, both by prison population and percent of population. China falls in second with a prison population of about 500,000 less than the United States, while having over triple its population. Even the great Russia has a less percentage of its population behind bars in the U.S., so that if Israel's bad, then America must be terrible in that category. Well, first off, again, you distort things. I don't think, obviously, it has the biggest prison population. It's got certainly the highest prison population per capita of any nation in the world, bar none. And Israel keeps literally sometimes more than 100,000 people behind bars at any one moment in a nation of just a few million. If you multiply that, I mean, come, let's talk about that. If you multiply that properly, that Israel would have 3-4 times the prison population of the United States of America if it was the same numbers. And of course, as I said earlier, they routinely engage in torture and all kinds of terrible activities. He said, you also made a point that Christians were killed by Jews in Palestine. Well, the point I was making is that these some of the silly Christians who don't seem to understand what Christianity is all about are supporting anti-Christian Jews who are killing Christians in the Middle East. And I don't understand that. And he says, he goes on to say, not only was the whole Holocaust centered around the idea of Christians killing masses of Jews. I don't think the Holocaust was centered around the idea of Christians killing masses of Jews. But what about the Crusades? Crusade, the word itself, stems from the Latin root crux, which means to take up the cross, and this was the whole, and was this whole war not called another crusade by our president? Just out of curiosity, would the Jews want to help with a new holy war against everyone not Christian? Well, first off, I think the Crusades, so-called Crusades, were a terrible mistake and a great loss of European blood. And I believe that we have the right to defend Europe. And I think this whole idea of resurrecting the Middle Eastern Holy Land from the other people who controlled it at the time, I think it was an idea that was that was absolutely defective. In fact, the Children's Crusade is one of the most insane things I've ever heard in my life, where many tens of thousands of Christian European boys and girls, young children, were marched and ultimately slaughtered in the Children's Crusade. And this is the kind of insanity that we've been delving in for a long time. You know, I'm a Christian, but let me tell you something. I'm a sane Christian and not an insane Christian like some of these people who are doing what they're doing right now in the Middle East, supporting really an anti-Christian regime. As far as why would the Jews want to help a new holy war against everyone not Christian, let me tell you something. The Israeli state doesn't care about any of that. All they care about is what's good for the Jews. Now, in an alternative passage, you quote Reverend Billy Graham and Nixon talking. You refer to how President Nixon agreed that Jews had an unfair grasp of the media. Let me remind you that this is the same president that was found to have ordered the illegal search and seizure against the foundations of even the great Constitution, of the foundation of the Constitution of the Watergate Hotel. I call into serious question if your points hold any validity. Well, the fact that Nixon, obviously Nixon did some things which he shouldn't have done, and a lot of things I disagree with Nixon on, incredibly so. Nixon, to me, sold out our cause in many, many, many ways, and he talked against affirmative action, he instituted it. He talked against busing, he instituted it. The welfare system grew under Richard Nixon. Many other aspects of Richard Nixon I don't like. But what I'm trying to point out is that many people in power and know, such as Billy Graham and Nixon, two of the most powerful men in the United States, behind the scenes, they talk about the Jewish control and influence over the media and how this is affecting the well-being of America. And they also talk about how they can't say it publicly. And I think that's pretty fascinating. In fact, Graham says, you know, that if the Jewish control over the media is not broken, it's going to destroy the United States of America. And ladies and gentlemen, I think we are being destroyed. But he goes on and says a few more things. He finally says, I'm also Jewish. I do believe there's many things that Israel and Jews have done wrong, namely the Mossad. But I've always disliked reading such pompous articles, one that declares all Jews unclean. Again, talk about a strange statement. I don't declare that all Jews are unclean. You know, I talk about the excesses and the activities of Jews who perhaps are unclean and do pretty terrible things against the Palestinian people, against the European people, and I think in many ways against their own people, because they lead to the reactions and they lead to the terrible things that take place over the centuries in terms of Jews because of their excess, because of their intemperate behavior. That's about it. He says, I also thank you for taking the time to read this. If you'd like at all possible, respond to this email. And he signs it A. Jewett. And that's different than the email name of Copeland, but anyway, that's the way he does it, and I think I've responded adequately here. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's about it. I just wanted to give you that email and give you some ideas and points, and maybe this will give you some ideas also in debating your family and friends and other people you come in contact with. We have a lot of work to do, and it's very important that we're able to phrase our opinions in an effective way, in an intelligent way. Thanks a lot. Take care. God bless you, and good luck to all of you. And let's spread this word all over the world. I'll be with you again tomorrow. Bye-bye now.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukes.com.